Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, the presenting sponsor for today's episode of Hear That Podcast Growlin' is Visa, a network working for everyone. I'm Paul Diener Jr. here with Jay Morrison of The Athletic. How we doing, Jay?
Doing great. Ready for a quick turnaround and another big game for the Bengals.
It is another big game for the Bengals. Thursday Night Football, Ring of Honor, their only primetime game of the year unless they get some late flexing. So there's a lot. It's a double whammy show for you today. We're still going to do kind of our regular Tuesday show, but we are full on in preview of the Jags, which is Thursday night at Paul Brown Stadium, 8:20. So I don't know if they're going to sell out or not. That's not been announced. I'm sure they'll have a lot of if they were close. I'm saying Sunday might have helped them get even closer, so we'll see what they've got. We got some news we want to run through. There's a number of different things. We want to talk a little bit about Tyler Boyd and what he had to say about the Pittsburgh Steelers. We're going to talk a little bit about what things look like next for the offense, on the schedule. Jay's got some stats, and I'm going to spoil it a little bit, Jay. Jay, you've got coin toss stats, and I could not be more excited about this.
They are not 50-50.
I'm totally on board with more coin toss stats. And if you can find anything more, if anyone can find stats more irrelevant or obscure, I should say, than coin toss stats, I dare you to. I am just on board. The more obscure, the better. So I cannot wait to find out the details on all those. We are going to have Mo Egger come in here and talk about his tweets, including one that takes a shot at local government, which I really enjoy. And we'll see what happens with that. And then we are going to get into the Jags here at the end of this episode. We're going to talk about what they look like, who they have been thus far, some growler bet, some run passer boots. We'll recap the growler bet from last week and last week's run passer boots, and we will have our predictions of Thursday night against the Jags. So a lot to get to, slam packed. Let's dive in, Jay. On the news front, well, injuries. You know, you end up with a few different injuries. The main one that people knew about was Chido Bayouzi is got his groin injury. We're kind of TBD on what that's actually going to look like in terms of how long he'll be out. I would not expect him to play Thursday, but Zach Taylor was kind of just not really committal. They wanted to kind of see more of what he looks like coming in on Tuesday. But, you know, to turn around with a groin injury and play 4 days later, I mean, we just watched a bunch of Steelers that weren't doing it a week later. It's just a matter of how many weeks would he be back against Green Bay? How serious is it? We will see on that. T. Higgins, Zach Taylor sounded a little bit hesitant on, where I think before the game against the Steelers was kind of pushing that optimism towards Thursday. The term it's a long season was brought up, and that's never a good sign. So I would say it potentially T. Higgins trending away from playing on Thursday night and making sure they have him ready to go against Green Bay. Xavier Suafilo is still banged up. Jackson Carmen will start this week. So they are turning it over to him. Like one more game after he had a solid performance against the Steelers, and it might not ever change. I had one other thing I wanted to mention, and that is people always say, oh, it was gonna be Wally Pipped. Is he gonna get Wally Pipped? We have to really be more current on this. Wally Pipp was over 100 years ago. Okay. Lou Gehrig took over his spot because of injury, and everyone calls it Wally Pipped. Is it Drew Bledsoe now?
Yeah, that's a better That's
I mean, can we just get a little more current? At least the guy who replaced him is still playing, even if he's in his late mid-40s. I mean, can we? I think we need to move on from Wally Pitt. But this could be a Drew Bledsoe situation in a very not as important in the grand scheme of football way, but the same concept.
It absolutely can, because you feel they were – it was kind of weird. They were really encouraged at first glance in the post-game press conference with how Jackson played. It was – Pro Football Focus had him as the lowest graded Bengals offensive player, down in the 30s. So I wonder, you know, what they saw on film. But if Suofilo can't go, then obviously, and he can't, Zach already said Carmen's going to start. But if he can come out and play well, it just feels like he's going to take the job over. Now, Zach wouldn't commit to that. But it's not as though Suofilo's been dominant himself, and it just feels like it's a huge spot for him, because it's not just a chance to win the job. It's a chance to play in prime time for everybody to see. It's a chance to play in prime time in his hometown. His first start comes on the road. And he had a couple family members there. I imagine he's going to have a lot more people there Thursday night. And he talked about how special that is and how meaningful it is for him. So it is a really big opportunity for him.
Yeah, I mean, he plays decently on Thursday. It's over. He's the guy. Yeah. That's what they wanted it to be from the beginning, and he obviously had the slow start where Frank Pollock had to kind of develop a relationship with him, shall we say? Start coaching him. And yes. I coached him hard, and he seemed appreciative of it, kind of looking back on where he came from a couple months ago and maybe in a better place, and certainly looked to be in a better place. And there were a number of runs on Sunday where you saw him moving people. You mentioned the PFF grade. I don't know. I look at no pressures, except for the one pressure obviously is on him, the free runner early, but they got that fixed. And after that, you know, if you got that happening out there, then I can deal with whatever, grade them whatever you want to grade them. If Burrow has protection like that, don't change anything. So that's part of that. It's other injury. Jesse Bates popped up with a neck. We saw him take a real awkward hit at the towards the end of that game and kind of laid there for half a second. And so he's got it listed as a neck. We'll know more on Tuesday. They had to put out a thing of whether he would have practiced, and they didn't even practice. It's just a formality the NFL demands on these Thursday games. So my guess is there's a chance. We just don't know. We don't know what that means with him being in there with a neck. So we'll see as the week progresses, as we get through today and closer to Thursday. These short weeks are just tough on guys to be fully recovered and come back to play on the short week. So, and Trey Waynes, I think we might see him. The tone was very optimistic from Zach Taylor, not just on Friday, but also on Monday. And now with your cornerback room banged up, it seems even more logical that you would see Trey Waynes make his Bengals debut after signing in March of 2020. He was damn near pre-pandemic, Jay.
Yeah, 18 months ago.
But so we may see Trey Waynes. The Bengals open as 7.5-point favorites against Jacksonville. How about that?
Yeah, it's been a while since they've been a favorite of that big. Looked it up on our drive back from Pittsburgh. I believe it was 2017, the last time they were favored by that many points.
Wild. Absolutely wild. We'll get much more into Jacksonville later on in the show. Let's start here. Tyler Boyd made waves, news, all of it a little bit. And he did it because he was talking about what he saw in the Pittsburgh Steelers. I want to bring this in. You can hear him say it himself. Here is Tyler Boyd talking about what he saw from the Pittsburgh Steelers at the end of Sunday's game.
You know, Tyler, you guys were talking about how this game was different. The Steeler game was different. You wanted to, you know, show them something. When you walked off the field, and I'm sure you shook hands with some of those guys, do you think the message was sent? Do you think they were looking at you guys in a different way than maybe they have in the past?
I think the good thing about that win was not only did the Steelers feel that, everybody in the country felt it, because the last plays of the game for them, they gave up. You could see it. They had three drops in a row, and that's for a team to see that is giving us more power, giving us the antidote to know how good we are. You know, So for a team to just lay down like that when before the game is over, because no matter what, no matter how much we're losing by or whatever the case may be, I know me and I know us, we not giving up. We're going to continue to try to make plays and make something happen. But they portrayed it to the whole nation on TV with what they were about and how they gave up. So, I mean, we just got to take advantage.
Not holding back.
No.
and not wrong. I mean, anybody that watched that knew what they were watching. 10 drops and all those at the end. I mean, absolutely. And we've watched a lot of, we've done a lot of judging if a team's quitting. Boyd is not lying. They don't quit. Yeah. They've been in some real meaningless spots. And we've never seen anything like what we did see out of Pittsburgh. I'll say, do you like it? Do you love it? Do you hate it?
That he said it?
That he said it.
I don't know. I'm somewhere between like and hate. I don't see what purpose it serves. You still have to play him again this year. And presumably TJ Watt and Highsmith and Stephon Tuitt. Those guys are all going to be back. And the last thing you want to do is poke that bear and give them extra bulletin board material. But that's just who Tyler is. He's never filtered himself. And I don't think he said it. I don't think he went into that saying, hey, I'm going to take a shot at these guys. If I remember right, the question was something about what did he feel the magnitude of that game was. And he was saying it was big because we saw the Steelers quit. We did that to them. You do like the, as reporters, obviously we love a guy that's going to speak his mind and say that kind of stuff, but I don't know the purpose it serves. And he came out and had a clarifying tweet this morning. I'm sure he probably got a little mention from Zach or someone else on that coaching staff about maybe that wasn't the best thing to say.
I like it.
Do you?
I mean, look, say it. Come out there and say it. Take it to him. There's a line that I have used, and it's usually it has almost always gone the other way over the last half a decade. To the winner go the narratives. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's when the Steelers beat the Bengals, all you hear is about, you know, all the stuff that you always hear, right? And about whatever situation, whether you go back to the playoff game or however it is, but. You know, it's like after the playoff game, you hear about Pac-Man and Burfict and not about Mike Munchak pulling Reggie Nelson's hair. It's like it's that. It's to the winner go the narratives. And here it is. It's the other way. You know, you win. You can say what you can say things like that. You can pop off like that. And they've won two in a row, and they've beat them up doing it both times. They've been the more physical, intimidating team two times in a row, and they came off a time where this guy who grew up in Pittsburgh. Knowing Pittsburgh football, is listening to the fans just booing them relentlessly and the team just not caring at the end. Tyler Boyd ain't going to hold back. There's just no topic that he's going to hold back on like that, and especially not one that he feels like he knows as well as anybody. And he does. I don't mind it. You know what? Be that. Own it. Talk it. You know, that's part of it. I don't mind that attitude of confidence that you have, and you know, stick in their face. Sure, why not?
What pops in my mind is, what if we were back in the olden days and we were allowed in the locker room? I mean, this was after damn near 24 hours thinking on it before he said it. If we had got him right after that game, who knows how much more he would have had to say about that? I mean, he had. More than a cooling off period, and he still dropped that. And there were a few other things in there he talked about. One in particular, a big topic of conversation was Mike Hilton made a speech to the team before the game, and Jamar Chase didn't want to go into what he said, but Tyler Boyd did. And he was talking about how disrespected Mike Hilton felt and the organization didn't value him and refused to pay him. And the whole time he's saying this, it's going through your mind. He's like, is this a subtweet for the Jesse Bates situation as well? That he was just talking about how ridiculous it was that the Steelers didn't re-sign their top turnover guy. And He said he felt everything that Mike Hilton was saying, and I just wondered if there was a little meaning behind that as opposed to just answering the question on what Mike Hilton's speech was about.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it means something to you when you hear that. And look, so much of this, it's the Michael Jordan, right? Not football Michael Jordan, basketball Michael Jordan. And I took that personal. It's creating ways to motivate. It's creating moments. And on a team of 50-plus guys, everybody can have something, you know, from week to week that can be a galvanizing force. And for this week, it was Mike Hilton. And maybe on Thursday, it'll be, you know, Burrow versus Lawrence will get people going. And the fact that Burrow saying, yeah, this guy, Urban Meyer, wouldn't play me. Okay, let's go, right? Like you can absolutely, you from week to week, you find what that is. And there's always something you can invent. I mean, Jordan did it for a decade and a half of inventing whatever he needed it to be and say, you know, and I took that personal. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
I want to kind of move into the direction of what happens next. I've been sort of poking around for a story this week about it feels like we're about to see an opening up of the playbook and an opening up of the offense. And there's a number of different pieces to that. But a big part of it is also an opening up of the schedule. And there are 5-0-3 teams right now. And the Bengals play 3 of them in their next 5 games. You know, you've got the Jags and the Lions and the Jets are all in your next 5 games. You are 2-1. You have built the momentum you wanted. It's all in front of you. It's all right in front of you to have that beginning of the season that you wanted. Things have broken your way. The Steelers, you caught them at the right time and they're not very good. You know, you got the luck, you bounces you needed against Minnesota to finish them off in the opener. Now you're sitting at 2-1, and you've got these 0-3 teams. The Jets look awful. The Jags have lost every game by double digits. You know, the Ravens are still battling all kinds of injury when you see them. The schedule has fallen your way a little bit to really take advantage of that momentum. Can they do it? Will they do it? I don't know. We'll start to learn, but it does open up and not just open up. I mean, the first 3 teams, we talked about this. We're all kind of constituted very similarly. They all theoretically had really good defenses, or you thought they would. And at least were really challenging, particularly up front in their own ways, and had a lot of pressures and have still. That changes now. Here is the, and this was through the first 2 games, and they haven't updated the Football Outsiders defensive metrics yet. But DVOA is how you've played against the rest of the league and all that stuff, takes that, your ranking in there. And then they have another rating called Dave that also brings their preseason projections in a little bit, just to, when it's early in the year, to kind of give a little bit more of a more accurate view of who, what they might be. The first 3, the Vikings and the Bears and the Steelers, were all ranked, their DAVE, their Dave, in the top half of the league. And everyone, except for the Ravens, is ranked in the bottom half of the league, including a bunch in the bottom 6 defensively. No pass rush, defenses that aren't going to be as good, it's a real chance for Zach Taylor to be more comfortable dropping back, throwing it down the field a little bit more, calling some stuff that requires a little bit more time, things that fans have been begging for. I think you will see more of that now as, one, you saw what they did against the Steelers. There's maybe a little bit more confidence in your protection. And two, there's a little less faith that the other side is going to be able to really take advantage. That means a little less of the running game and the short passing game and a little bit more of the downfield shots that you've seen so explosive. And I think that's an exciting thing when you start thinking about what this offense could maybe really start to blossom into what you thought it could be.
Yeah, it's not just the opposing defenses that they're about to play that can help them open the playbook. It's their own defense. I mean, the confidence that is growing in Lou Anarumo's defense can let you not just open the playbook, but take more risk. And Zach's always been a guy willing to be aggressive and gamble a little bit. And he even joked about his 4th-and-1 at the 30 decision in Minnesota on Sunday in the post-game press conference at Pittsburgh. I mean, if your defense is going to keep playing like this and you're playing other defenses that are at the bottom of the league, it does. It really opens things up for this team to start taking more shots because they're hitting them and you've got the running game going. That sets it up. It's just everything is falling into place. And, you know, you talked about 3 of the next 5 are winless. I mean, think about it. Green Bay needs to pull out a miracle field goal at the end. Otherwise, they're 1-2. Baltimore needs a Justin Tucker 66-yard miracle field goal at the end. Otherwise, they're 1-2. This schedule, and I'm not saying Green Bay and Baltimore are bad. They've played good teams, but the schedule has really opened up, and for that reason, the offense can really open up as well.
I went through and looked this up because we talked after the game about the efficiency that the Bengals offense showed, and Mixon running for 5 yards a carry and Burrow throwing for 9.6 yards per attempt. When you bring in Burrow's runs and Asmaje P. Ryan, 1 for -1 or whatever it was, 2 for -1, they ended up at 4 yards per carry. And I was like, okay, 9.5 yards per attempt, 4 yards per carry. How often does that happen? Well, the last 5 years, there have been 87 instances of a team pulling that off. What do you think the record is? How many wins do you think those teams have in those 87 games, Jay?
I'll say 80-7, and the 7 losses were against teams that also did it.
You know what? I didn't look at how many teams both did it. I should have done that. It was 72-15. Maybe there's a bunch that both did it. I mean, there's only been 3 this year. Okay. And so the Bengals have now done it 2 of their last 5 games. You go back to the Houston game at the end of last season, and then they did it again on Sunday. You know, that's the idea. That's the plan. And when you do that, when you're able to do that, to be efficient, in both, you don't lose. Those teams don't lose no matter what else the circumstances are. 72-15. Okay. I mean, that is what they've been able to do now a couple of times is absolutely how this needs to, what this can be and how this can go. And the fact that they've been able to get Mixon going in a couple of games now. And I also, you know, we made a big deal of the light box last week and how they had really struggled that way. And Pittsburgh was not interested in a light box. No. they were heavy much of the day. There were 2 snaps where they were out there and the Bengals ran against a light Pittsburgh box. That was it. One of them was the 27-yarder. They made them pay. They punished him just like we talked about last week. His longest run of the year came when Pittsburgh dared to not put an extra body in the box, and Mixon made him pay. That's exactly what you're talking about. And that's how you end up having the efficient passing game too. That, and it helps to have Ja'Marr Chase blown by people down the field. But, you know, you don't need to throw it a bunch. I mean, 14 of 18, right? Mm-hmm. Now, granted, it was small sample size on snaps because of how often Pittsburgh had the ball, but that's all that matters. The volume stats of last year are fine. They don't win games. what wins games is the efficiency stats, and that's what we're seeing the Bengals do. And now if they are able to open it up a little bit more against some defenses that aren't as potent because they're more comfortable in the line, they're not as nervous about the pass rush, they still feel like they can get Mixon going, and teams are seeing that, and they're still nervous about that. You have Ja'Marr Chase. Now how our defense is going to react differently? How much more are they going to sit the two safeties back or drop the three, you know, cover the, how much more are they going to be aware of over the top of wherever Chase is? How much more space does that create for Tyler Boyd? How much more space does that create for Joe Mixon? There is a ripple effect of what is now on tape of Ja'Marr Chase. Teams do not want that. This whole league has now become a bunch of defensive coordinators focused, whether it's these umbrella coverages, the Vic Fangio stuff, of none of that, right? Just keep everything in front of you. How much are they going to do that? And if the Bengals continue to show that they can take advantage of everything else, the playbook opens up big time for Zach Taylor.
It's the exact reason they were locked in on him instead of Penei Sewell or any offensive lineman in the first. This is exactly what they thought that Ja'Marr Chase could bring to this offense. And, you know, you forget that T. Higgins didn't play in that Pittsburgh game, and they were still able to go over the top. I mean, when he comes back, I don't know if it's going to be Thursday, doesn't look great for that chance, but I don't think he's going to be out for a long time. You bring him back and put another weapon in that offense, and he can go get deep balls and a little better size, a little taller than Ja'Marr. They can go either way. If you got two guys that can take the top off the defense, it does. It's just there's a lot to be encouraged about where this offense can go. They've won two of the three games they've played. They haven't really looked explosive yet, but as you said, the efficiency thing is the bigger thing at this point, and that you keep that going, and then the super explosiveness can come out. And yes, they've hit explosive plays, but I mean, as far as getting up in the 30s and getting up in the 400 yards per game, those type of explosions where it's just all game long you're hitting it, I think that's still to come.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the two of the, you know, Zach Taylor's after the game, the two deep balls to Chase came on the same, that before halftime came on the same play. I mean, the one against Minnesota and the one against Pittsburgh was the same play. It was a 9-8-9 concept. If you're familiar, it's just two goes in kind of a post and, you know, to try to draw the safety in or whatever. And you, when you do that, when you're in those formations where you got four or five wides that they've used often, we've criticized empty for a lot of reasons, but when you can't protect it, you know, you're sitting back, you're worried about Chase, and there's all these other receivers out there, and one of them is Tyler Boyd, and what do you get? You can get things like you got on his touchdown, working on Devin Bush all day underneath. I mean, that snag route he hit him on, I mean, it's over. And so that type of stuff, I really think that what you're about to see over the next few weeks will be the opening up of the playbook. For everyone that screamed and yelled about not throwing downfield enough, and that includes Ja'Marr Chase, I think is going to whetting their appetite here over the next few weeks, because I think things change. And Jackson Carmen coming in, if he can be that solidifying force, plays a big role in that. I'm just really interested to see how different these games are called over the next few weeks compared to the previous three. Because here's the other factor that we mentioned on Sunday, and I'll throw it in. And now Joe Burrow's feeling mobile in the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as Joe Mixon said, he's got his swag back. That's my quarterback, right? When he called his own audible and did the Joe Mixon drop. And now Burrow feels comfortable doing that more often. He didn't know if he'd even be able to feel that way all year. You throw that in, right? So now, if you're Zach Taylor, okay, I'm comfortable. I love what Chase has given to me over the top. I'm not as worried about Burrow and not being mobile back there in case something does break down. I'm not as worried as the defense coming after him. I'm not as worried about the offensive line after what happened in Pittsburgh. Okay, we don't need to throw a million dink and dunks anymore. Not that you won't still do that, but you can open it up a lot more. It sets up to be absolutely that over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see, as much as they like empty, that quarterback draw is a great play against that. And if we are going to start seeing, I mean, because Zach said he didn't call that. That was Joe calling that. I wonder if that will be a part of it. And I also wonder, was that one of the two plays that was against a light box? Or were you saying there was two mix and rushes against a light box?
Two mix and rushes against okay. a light box.
Because yeah, that was a light count. Box too. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just tracking Mixon's light box runs. Yeah. No, that would absolutely have been one. Burrow had 22 rushes for a first down last year. Now, some of those are sneaks, but a lot of them were mm-hmm. runs. One of them was his first career touchdown. That was an element of his game. And now that wasn't up there in the 50s with Lamar Jackson, who led the league at 56, but it was in the top 10. That's a weapon of his game. That's a part of his game that he really wants to use. And you know, if you got to feel like having that back, there's a chance he could end up in that top 10 again this year. And that just opens up things even more. There's just a lot kind of happening offensively that has quietly under the radar actually gone well as you try to plot what things can look like going forward. Jay, I want to get into your stats here real quick. You've got coin toss stats.
I do.
And I need them.
It struck me when they won the toss in Pittsburgh. It's like, well, wow, they won the 3-0 this year. They won every toss. So I went back and looked and saw how often that they've won the coin toss, because it's minutia in some regard, but every team likes to do it. Zach loves to do it, loves to talk about it. The idea of the double dip, and they pulled it off. Get the touchdown to Chase right at the end of the half, come back and score a field goal to start the second half. You get those back-to-back possessions. So there is some relevance to winning the coin toss. There's no strategy, I don't think, to it. I mean, I would love to, if we were back in the days where you could pull a coach aside and ask about this, because it's not something I'm going to bring up in a press conference, but I wonder, you know, is he calling heads or tails from the sideline? Is he leaving it up to the players? How do they do that? So there's got to be some rhyme or reason to it.
We need this. I need more coin toss questions, Jay.
But it is. You go back to last year. They've won. This doesn't include overtime coin tosses. They've won six straight coin tosses at the start of a game. I don't know what I guess I could figure those odds out, but I didn't do it. But that. Go ahead, flip a coin six times. See how many times you can get it right six times in a row. It's pretty crazy, and it's not just that. It's six straight, 9 of 11, and then the reason that the whole who picks what they call heads or tails, that type of thing, is it always tails never fails. They go by feel. In games
when
when the Bengals are on the road and they're the ones actually calling it in the air, or not, they don't call it in the air anymore, but calling it. They've won 3 in a row and 7 of 8. So it is, it's pretty remarkable that they've been able to, that's what I have in my story today, that if they can start winning games at the same rate they win coin tosses, they're Super Bowl contenders.
There's no doubt. Unbelievable. Hey, Zach Taylor, 4-2 in the last six.
2-0 against Pittsburgh. And if they can win Thursday night, he would have two straight primetime wins.
Wow.
So let's not forget, though, Marvin started 3-1 in primetime, and we know what direction it went after that.
We've said this since the beginning, but I think it's worth reiterating as they start to win a few games here. And that is when you drafted Joe Burrow and Joe Mixon. Was it Mixon who talked about him in the big moments? He's like, he has this thing where the bigger the moment gets, the more dialed in he gets, the more you just feel him taking things over. Joe Burrow teams are not going to struggle in primetime mm-hmm. because the lights are brightest, the stage is biggest. He lives for that. He showed that at LSU. And he has showed that, you know, thus far really in his career, and some of the biggest moments he has been at his best. You know, the last play against Minnesota is a perfect example of it. He loves that. He lives for it. So I really think that Burrow is really, and if Marvin Lewis would have had Joe Burrow, I mean, I know Bengals fans are cringing right now at the idea of, but I mean, I think that maybe his primetime record would look differently, but.
Well, he did have Carson to start, and maybe that's why he was 3-1 to start.
Yeah. Maybe that's why sometimes it's about who you got.
Yeah.
You also have some Logan Wilson stats that I want to talk about before we get to Mo, because we're going to talk about the defense with Mo a little bit. What do you got on Logan Wilson?
Yeah, so two interceptions against Pittsburgh gives him three for the year. He leads the NFL in interceptions, and that's rare for a linebacker. But I was curious, you know, how many times a linebacker has done that, had three interceptions in his team's first three games. And Logan Wilson's only the second linebacker in the Super Bowl era to do it. The Titans' Keith Bullock did it in 2007. That's it. Those are the only linebackers to have three picks in the first three games. And if you think about it, he had 10 interceptions in college as a linebacker. He's got five already in the NFL. And he only played 12 games last year. So that's five interceptions in 15 games for a linebacker. So I went back to see if anybody had topped that. And since the 1970 merger, the Falcons' Al Richardson had seven in 1980, and the Bills' Ken Lee had six from 71 to 72. He only played one game in 71. So that's it. Those are the only guys that have had more interceptions than Logan Wilson. Only linebackers have had more interceptions than Logan Wilson in their first 15 games. Interestingly enough, there was another linebacker that had five interceptions, matched Logan Wilson's total through 15 games, and it was a former Bengal in Odell Thurman.
How about that? And people remember how much he changed the dynamic of that defense, you know, when before everything fell apart for him. You know, it's just, people thought he was going to win Defensive Rookie of the Year at one point. I think people still debate that, actually, fairly heavily from what happened that year. Really interesting stuff. Let's bring in Mo, and we're going to ask him about a tweet that has to do with defense, and then we'll see where things unhinge from there. And we'll be back after we talk to Mo too, to talk a little bit about predictions and do our run passer boots and our growler bets and all that stuff. So here is here's Mo Egger. All right, now it's time for our favorite regular Tuesday segment. We catch up with ESPN 1530's Mo Egger to talk about his tweets. We got two tweets for you. You weren't as active during the Steelers game as I thought you might be.
I was watching the game with friends, and so that does tend to sort of cut into the tweet time, and that's probably a good thing.
Yeah. How many drafts did you have over the course of Sunday? Now, not like beer, not like drink, like drafts of tweets.
Tweets that I almost sent. There were a couple about Ben that I looked at and said, maybe not. Perhaps not this one. There were a few. There were a few. I was tame. I think I was tame on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, you try to take the high road.
I do. Well, and now I'm like self-conscious. Like I'm like, well, if I send this, is this going to come up with Paul and Jay? So now you guys are in my head.
I like it. That's the idea. That's because that means you really wanted to say it if it comes out. And I appreciate that. You know, we're trying to put everybody in a good place. Okay, so we've got two. First one is Bengals related. We'll start here. Your first one is a tweet from 4:05 on
right after
Sunday.
That's sometimes not the best time.
A, I hope Ben Roethlisberger announces after the game that he's returning in 2022. B, the Bengals have played as well defensively these three games as anyone ever could have hoped. I would say there's a very small chance that A is ever going to happen after what we've seen the last few weeks. I mean, it's over.
It is over. And so that sort of continues a little theme, because when he announced he was coming back in 2021, we threw a little party, like a welcome back Ben party. We were so excited. And because and maybe this isn't steeped in reality, but it feels like every year there's dimension of drama with Ben Roethlisberger. Is he going to come back? Is he not going to come back? And I'm sure in Pittsburgh for a while, you know, they were like, oh, man, if he doesn't come back, what's going to happen? And now it's after watching him at the end of last year, watching him against the Bengals on Monday Night Football, watching him in the playoffs against the Browns. Now you're like, God, I hope the Steelers have that dude playing quarterback until he's like 62. That would be fantastic. And so it's just a little way of sort of taunting Steelers fans a little bit. But I mean, you know, legitimately, that team is sort of in quarterback purgatory right now. You're stuck with Ben Roethlisberger, I guess, this year. There's no clear succession plan. They're probably not going to be awful enough to draft in the top five. The quarterback class of 2022 is not regarded as especially good or deep. I have this nightmare. Tony Pike and I talked about this, of Desmond Ridder of UC playing for the Steelers, which would just be awful. But I'm enjoying this. I'm enjoying this immensely. And I said on the radio yesterday that for the first half of my life, the Pittsburgh Steelers were sort of in quarterback no man's land. They were Cordell Stewart and Mark Malone and Neil O'Donnell. And then, you know, they've been sort of spoiled the last 16, 17 years, or I guess maybe the first 14, 15 years of that with a Hall of Fame quarterback. And now they're on the verge of sort of being stuck at quarterback. And they've got this old, fat, flabby guy who's throwing dump offs on fourth and 10 with the game on the line. And I love it. And I want as much of it as I can possibly get.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
I want to know what Mo the fan is like watching a game with friends. Because I can't do it. I mean, I love my friends, but a lot of times they want to talk about anything but the game. And if it's a game I really want to see, so do you have fans that are really knowledgeable or friends that are really knowledgeable about football? Are there a lot of conversations, or is it kind of a, hey, everybody just shut up and watch the game type of thing?
You know, it's sort of anybody can watch it, but you just like, I'm going to the game Thursday with my sister, doesn't know a lot about football, but she enjoys just the show of the game, but also me gesticulating through the 3 hours. it's not unbearable. It's not like, oh, Mo is making this unpleasant, but if you're going to sit down at 1 o'clock and you know, we're going to talk about your vacation plans or how you're going pumpkin picking next week, that's we're not doing that. That's for before the game. It's for the other 21 hours on a Sunday or the other 6 days of the week. I'm not one of these like locked in and I can't talk to anybody and enjoy myself. And I'm not like breaking down coverages in real time. But I do like to watch the game with people that have a similar emotional investment as I do. And so I tend to, and not that any, you know, if I go watch a game somewhere, not that anybody's not welcome, but I do tend to try to surround myself with people who at least care as much about the outcome of the game as I do, even if they're, but most are more knowledgeable, and God knows it's not hard to be more knowledgeable than me. And some are just there to watch the game on a Sunday and they hope the Bengals win, but they couldn't tell you who the main particulars are. But it can be an adventure, especially. And it's when they're bad, I get accused of caring almost a little bit too much. And then when they're good, I get accused of being sometimes a little obnoxious, but it could be an experience. And I went to the game in Chicago and I told you guys, I left early and that there was a part of my soul that died that day, but I understood logically what we were doing. We had to get home. The game was awful. And then they came back and made it 20-17. And I'm like, great, this is what I get. This is what I get for actually leaving a game early. So, but it's not, I've not had anybody who's watched a Bengals game with me say, God, I'll never do that again. I've had people who have watched games with me that have said, I wish I would have recorded that experience. Or there was some language that I didn't think you would use, which, I mean, come on. But it's a fun experience. It's more fun. Like when they've won big games, and granted, there haven't been many of those, when they've won big games, I've said to people, like, I'm not really going to be responsible for my behavior for the next 20 or so minutes. So.
I mean, and I sort of wrote about this a little bit after the game. There's nothing that moves the needle like beating Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh with in the journey to win a fan base back. You guys were out for a live. Was that you guys do a live event at the Hard Rock?
A live event at the Hard Rock Casino. Yeah.
What was that like? I'm curious if it felt like a big moment or if it felt like people just kind of more pointing and laughing at where the Steelers are at.
You know what? It was the first time I've watched a Bengals Steelers game without Steelers fans present. And I don't know if that says something about where we were. It's just not something Steelers fans are going to go, or Pittsburgh fans aren't that excited about their team. So there was that. Normally there's intermingling and friendly. I don't really believe in, you know, screaming at people because they root for the other team. What was interesting about it was the ease with which the Bengals won the game. And so by the time 4 o'clock came, it was sort of anticlimactic, right? I mean, it was the Bengals were the better team. They led the entire way for the most part. The game really didn't feel that much in doubt. Even when Pittsburgh had the ball with 2 minutes left down by 14 points, I think most of us felt pretty good, like they were about to salt this game away. So in a way, it felt the way I hope it starts to feel moving forward, which is, yep, the better team won. The Bengals beat the Steelers. They're supposed to. They were better on both sides of the ball. And it didn't require any sort of last minute heroics or comeback. And those things are all great. But it was, to me, it was just it was striking that once the game ended. In fact, the Baltimore Detroit game was just ending with that finish with the 4th-and-19 conversion, the 65-yard kick, the delay of game that was missed, and almost instantly everybody's attention shifted to something that was dramatic. And obviously there's an AFC North connection there, and almost away from the fact that the Bengals just went to Heinz Field and beat the Pittsburgh Steelers and beat them pretty thoroughly. So I think the ease with which they did it sort of undercut the just instant excitement and jubilation when they beat the Steelers on Monday Night Football last year. As bad as that team was, I mean, it was cool just sort of walking into Paul Brown Stadium and watching people celebrated that game like it was a playoff win, and it was win number three. Where I was on Sunday, people were happy and during the game really excited. But by the time it ended, it was like, yeah, this is how today's game was supposed to unfold. And it did. And now on to whatever's happening in Detroit. And I guess more specifically, what happens on Thursday.
Just to jump into the second part of your tweet. I mean, we talked a lot about before the season about what the expectations should be of this defense and just being like, I don't know, is this defense going to be the reason we talk about them losing a lot? And now how much does it change? I mean, it just changes the dynamic of your expectations for the team when, you know, I thought after the preseason in camp, the ceiling of where this defense could be had changed. And I thought, well, maybe they could be 10, 11, 12. And now here we are. We're talking about a team in that in some significant rankings, you know, metrics is like a top five group. Now it's early and that they haven't really played an explosive offense yet. But I mean, that's as much reason to believe as anything.
Yeah. You know, you could say, well, Chicago's offense is not very good. And what they were doing against Cleveland is remarkable. And, you know, Pittsburgh's got an old quarterback and they don't have the weaponry that you're maybe used to and all that, but it go back to the preseason. I think a lot of us thought the floor was low. The ceiling wasn't that high. And now I think you feel like the floor is higher and the ceiling is higher and they've gotten contributions from all over the place. Right. I mean, it feels like on the defensive line, it's not just one guy wreaking havoc, but play to play, there's somebody who's doing something big. It's Reader. It's Ogunjobi. It's Trey Hendrickson, Sam Hubbard. I know you were excited about him on Sunday,
day.
Paul. Yeah. I just, you know, you talk about wanting to be around somebody when something happened, when Sam Hubbard gets a sack, Logan Wilson. I mean, I've been waiting for a linebacker who can make plays since, you know, the Vontaze Burfict's prime, and Logan Wilson looks like he could be that guy. And he certainly was. 14 tackles and 2 interceptions. They get by again without Trey Waynes, who I think might be Harvey the Rabbit or Manti Te'o's girl. I said to my friends on Sunday, I'm like, if Thursday night a guy just showed up in a Trey Waynes uniform, would anybody really know the difference? Yeah, because But you know, I mean, even with Eli Apple chasing Steelers wide receivers like my dog chases his blue ball, the defense held up pretty well. And it might not the most fearsome unit, but you know, you were talking about they haven't played explosive offenses. How many of them do they really have? I know Aaron Rodgers is going to come to town, but Jacksonville does not have what you would call an explosive offense. Detroit certainly doesn't. They have the Jets on the schedule. And as good as Baltimore and Cleveland may be, I don't know that you would really attach the word explosive to their offenses as a whole. They certainly have some individual players who are capable. You know, Lamar Jackson is Lamar Jackson. But I think suddenly you look at the schedule and you look at the way they're playing on defense and you look at their relative health. And I think you have to feel pretty good about where that direction is going. And I think you really have to feel pretty good about the guy pulling the strings on defense, because if anybody's had a good last 3 weeks, it seems like it's Lou Anarumo.
I mean, he's had a good last, really, going back to since March, right? Since he got a bunch of people to pay for talent to show up on his group, because and the fact that he's doing something with it. Look, I mean, his feet were to the fire immediately. If he would have been an easy fall guy, scapegoat, 5 weeks in if this defense had been poor, and they could have inserted Mark Duffner and rearranged some pieces and said, you know, we should have moved on last year. The fact that he's done what he does, not only has saved his job, I think it's saved the direction of this team and some of the hope that they have. I'll real quick to get you out of here. We do have to have you address FC Cincinnati's coaching situation makes our local government seem stable. A tweet sent yesterday at 10 in the morning. In the morning, you know, 10:03. Yeah,
here we go. Monday morning. Let's go.
Monday morning. I feel like I should just poke all bears.
Boom.
I appreciate a good two-pronged attack like that one was.
Well, I love making fun of local government. You know, when UC changed basketball coaches, I tweeted something to the effect of UC has had three basketball coaching changes since 1989. We've had four Cincinnati Council indictments since last May or whatever. So I love poking away. And the reason I do is there are some city council people who follow me, and I don't know. I don't really know why anybody would follow me, much less them. But I love just sort of mocking the just ongoing dysfunction of local government. But then you add to it this FC Cincinnati dynamic. Am I wrong?
No.
John Harkes, Alan Koch, Ron Jans, Yop Stom, and then in between, Johan DeMay was the interim coach twice. And he got whacked yesterday as well. It's just been this cycle. And at some point you're like, well, God, maybe what should have happened here is when the team jumped to Major League Soccer, a former city council person shouldn't have been the guy picking the players, but that's where we were. And so you sort of tie in both. Jeff Birding he was on city council. He's now running FC Cincinnati. I'm not saying he was a bad city council person. He certainly has had his successes running the soccer, the franchise and getting the stadium done and, you know, all the excitement over FC Cincinnati. But as a sports entity, they've been terrible. Non-competitive. They've won one home game. I don't blame them for firing the coach, but it just seems like as much as people mock, well, the Bengals have been too stable and the Reds have been too stable. On the opposite end of that is FC Cincinnati, which has just been this just, you know, portrait of just chaos and instability. And at some point you go, it's not the coaches and it's not these people from other parts of the world that you're bringing in, which by the way, they said about Yop Stom, now he can go home. Like it sounded like he was banging on Jeff Birding's door. Can I go back to Europe? It's I don't know that what they did is wrong. And I'm not saying that what they do next isn't going to work. But following that team is I need a cigarette when I'm done. It hurts. I can't follow
at this point. I didn't think that anybody could so quickly plummet to, you know, local embarrassing laughingstock when you're in a city with the lack of success that you've had from the two other professional sports teams, but they've managed to do it.
The bar wasn't very high, right? All they had to do was kind of be okay.
I didn't know it could go lower, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, 3 years ago, there was this massive party because they're going to Major League Soccer, and it felt like they really sort of owned a chunk of the town, and now they're an afterthought. And it doesn't help their case that the Reds have at least been competitive this year and fun to watch, except for the last month. And the Bengals have Joe Burrow and UC football's in the top 10. I mean, those things weren't around, didn't exist in 2016, 2017, and 2018. But the way that team has plummeted in the consciousness of people here. I know people still want to go see the stadium, and the stadium is phenomenal, and going to FC Cincinnati games is still a lot of fun. But as a sports entity, they're almost non-existent. And again, that's not because of the cycling through coaches, but that's become what they're known for. As a sports franchise, that's become what they're known for. It was fans and atmosphere and all these people going to soccer games. And now the conversation has shifted to, great, they're going to hire a new head coach. And then is he going to make it a year? When's he going to get let go? And that's not a good place to be. And it's really not a good place to be when you have, when you're just starting out, which is, you know, they are.
Well, I'm sure you immediately heard from Jeff Birding after that tweet. I'm sure it really cut at him deep.
I'll just be transparent here. Jeff Birding at an event in May gave me a dead fish handshake. The look away dead fish handshake. I was at this event. These former Bengals players were honoring Sam Wyche, and I was asked to co-MC it. I'm not sure why, because they had Dan Horde and Dave Lapham. Well, let's add Mo to that mix. And I'm walking, and there's Jeff Birding, and I had just gone to a game. I wanted to talk about the stadium, and he gives me the look away dead fish handshake. Now, when Don Garber, the Major League Soccer commissioner, comes to town, does he get a look away dead fish handshake? So since then, it's not that I root against FC Cincinnati. I do root for them. I want them to win. I've gone to games. I have a good time. I want them to do well. I want fans here to be happy. But there's a part of me that goes, you know what? That guy's never going to succeed. The dead fish look away handshake. If you're going to give me the dead fish handshake, look me in the eye and at least tell me to go F myself. Yeah. Right? No, you don't even have the stones to look me straight in the face as you're giving me the dead fish. So part of me feels like there's a leadership gap. No good leader is offering dead fish look away handshakes.
No. And maybe that's how he said goodbye to Jaap Stam. Maybe it was just a look away dead fish, go back to Europe. And then that was it. That was how he got exited. That's probably what happened. Mo, I appreciate you sharing your tweets. Please don't be careful. Maybe next week we'll do Mo's tweet drafts of ones that you didn't send.
Sure,
that'll be next week. Thank you, brother.
All right. See ya. See you guys.
Well, that was fun.
Mo fired up on a Tuesday morning.
Absolutely. You know, you never know where these things are going to go. And that's the beauty of it, Jay. You're never going to, we're going to end up down a Jeff Birding dead fish handshake wormhole, and I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
Yeah, Mo's getting nothing but daps from me. I don't ever want to be accused of a dead
look
fish.
Although
that
eyes.
Is yes, that is something I have drilled into my son. Is you, it's firm, and you look him in the eye when you shake their hand. And I guess Jeff Birding's dad never taught him that.
What's going to happen with this? Are we ever going to shake hands really again?
Well, true.
Post-pandemic, is it all just going to be complicated handshakes and daps and rocks?
Head nods.
Yeah, head nods. I think we've all drawn much more comfortable with the rock at this point. You know, I feel like it's a real solid. It kind of says, I had thought about this before, and I'd heard this a long time ago. People who really understand, you know, public health people are like, why are we shaking hands with everybody anyway? Like, that's really not, we really never should have been doing that. I understand it goes way back, and that's great. Like, I feel like this is a really great opportunity for us to stop the cultural norms, and we should all just be moving to some form of rocks anyway. So I think this is a good thing, but still, look them in the eye when you rock them, okay?
Yeah.
Don't look aside on the rock.
I think the origin of the handshake is to prove that you didn't have a weapon in your hand. Do we really need that anymore?
I hope not. We might, actually. that is a conversation for another podcast another day. We're here to talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars. Who are the Jags, you may ask? They're so jaggy this year, but they have Urban Meyer, of course, and they have Trevor Lawrence. So that's what they are building around. That's what they feel like they are. They are also a mess. They've lost three games by double digits, and you know they're not getting killed like you would think. So I mean, they were up in the third quarter against Arizona, and then just fell apart. Trevor Lawrence has been what a lot of rookie quarterbacks are: some moments of big flashes and some moments of what the hell is that? He's been throwing a bunch of picks. He's also had some really, I mean, you see where it is. I mean, you know what Trevor Lawrence is. You know what he was in college. You know his rare physical traits, all that stuff. He's just making the rookie mistakes that rookie mistakes make. And
he had one that was an absolute killer on a pick six to Byron Murphy on a botched flea flicker that he still tried to throw off to the side, and pick sixes, and it changes the whole game, and that was it. Their defense is not great. They just traded away C.J. Henderson, a former first-round pick who was unhappy, and added Dan Arnold, not of the Wonder Years, but of the Carolina Panthers tight end. He's going to play Thursday. They've had some of that unhappiness of guys demanding to be traded has still been kind of lingering in through them with Urban trying, I think, set his own culture. There's a lot of mess happening there with the Jags.
The one thing that Trevor Lawrence hasn't looked like a rookie is he's not taking sacks. I think Urban's kind of drilled it into his head to, because his completion percentage is really low. And I think he's kind of already grasped that idea of throw the ball away, move on to the next play. That's the Jaguars have only given up 5 sacks all year. That's rare for a rookie quarterback. So it's something that we've seen a strength of the Bengals. It's going to be interesting to see if they can get to him, or if Trevor Lawrence is going to continue in that vein of just throwing balls away and maybe making some ill-advised throws like the flea flicker for the pick six. I wonder, the big thing that is curious to me about this game is, as bad as the Jags offense has been, it's a serious deal that the Bengals defense played 83 snaps on Sunday, and then they're coming back for a quick turnaround. I think the Jaguars can exploit that a little bit. I expect this to be a little higher scoring game because of that. I heard on Bengals line last night, I was out for a drive and Lapp was interviewing Lou Anarumo, and he said, as big of a win as you thought as that was, plane ride home was really quiet. There were a lot of defensive guys snoring. I mean, they worked their butts off in that game. Those long drives, that saps you. And that's something to kind of keep an eye on Thursday night is how fresh that defense can be. They do a good job of running guys in and rotating. But again, you've got some injuries on that side of the ball that could limit that a little bit, especially in the secondary. So I do think we're going to see not a coming out party for Trevor Lawrence, but I think that Jaguars offense is going to do better than people think.
The one thing they've been good at thus far is running the ball, and James Robinson has kind of given them a little bit of spark, and they use Trevor Lawrence in the run game, as you might expect, knowing who he was at Clemson too. So, you know, it's kind of a thing where you think the Bengals through 3 weeks have been really good against the run, but how much energy will they have to go up there and try? If you take that away from the Jags, you just assume that you hope to be in a spot where Trevor's going to start throwing you the ball a little bit. And take advantage of that and get the turnovers that they have been able to get so far. But I think that's the Jaguars' hope, is they can come in here and continue to get that good run game, be a part of what gets them by, and then maybe take advantage of the Bengals' beat-up secondary. You know, if Jesse Bates doesn't play and Chido Bey doesn't play and Eli Apple's still out there, even if Trey Waynes comes back in his first game in 2.5 years or whatever, you know, you're talking about a lot of questions and that maybe you could take advantage with. Look, a guy Bengals fans are familiar with, Marvin Jones. They have Laviska Shenault, who's really scary, DJ Chark, who caught a touchdown pass on a great ball from Lawrence against Arizona. And, you know, Marvin Jones has been really good with them. They've had a nice combination going. I mean, they can get it cooking, and they have gotten it cooking. It's just a matter of not making those bad mistakes that kill teams. Is how the Jags can avoid that. And so, you know, they're an interesting team in that regard, where they have been close. It's just and done a lot of things that you like and a lot of things that make you think they can go win games. But there just has been a lot of those mistakes that have really doomed them. And that's why they've lost 3 games by double digits. One little stat, I point out this. It's just short week traveling on the road, and a short week is tough. I went ahead and looked it up. Teams playing at home on their Thursday night games the last 5 years win 59% of the time. Now on a Sunday, it's 55%. So we're not talking about massive percentage points, but a thing. You know, 4%. Ask gamblers if 4% is a thing. You're playing those percentages, baby. I do think it matters in that regard, and you can maybe see that happen a little bit, especially with the Bengals having some positive momentum coming out of the game, the win against Pittsburgh. Bengals growler bet time. We have, first of all, we had a winner from last week. Congratulations to Alex. I don't have your last name on Twitter. Alex, your avatar makes you look pretty young. I don't
I'm uncomfortable. I'm going to need to see an ID. I know I can't be giving beer out to minors. I think that could hurt our podcast, its ratings, and its viability as a show that we can continue to go forward with, and maybe my job status. But if we see a quality, solid ID that I can believe in that's not fake, then some 50 West beer will be yours. Otherwise, I'm sure we could find some sort of compromise that we could do.
Yeah, that I mean, I thought there was a chance someone would hit it. I knew we wouldn't have the entire spectrum covered, but it wasn't an easy one, but it was there for the taking. And congratulations to Alex, because most people weren't even in the same realm as he. Most people were down in the, both of us were both sub 250. Ben ended up with 318, and impressive win to hit that one on the nose.
Yeah, I don't think any of us would have thought that Ben was going to throw it 58 times. And and so, you know, that's the way it goes. Yeah, that was an impressive hit because there was hardly anybody that had anything over 300. But the fact that got that, good for him. So that obviously means this is going to be ungettable. I hope. I'm not in the mood to make it easy. And that means this week's Bengals Growler Bet, which you can hit us up, hashtag Bengals Growler Bet on Twitter. Or send an email to me, pdaner@theathletic.com. Make sure Growler is in the subject header. It's the way I'll find you. Bengals Growler Bet this week. I need two numbers from you. Joe Burrow yards per attempt, Trevor Lawrence yards per attempt. That's one decimal. Go to one decimal. So 7.8, 5.2, 3.1, whatever it is. I need both of those numbers to be on the nose. That's it. I need two numbers this week. None of this easy one passing number stuff. All right. Yards per attempt for Burrow and for Lawrence from Thursday night's game. Make sure you get that in before kickoff. All right, Jay, what do you got?
Well, I'm going to stick with my palindrome theme, even though it's not working for me. You're 3-1. You have a 3-1 lead in these growler bets, but I'm going to go Joe Burrow 7.5, Trevor Lawrence 5.7.
Okay, I'm going to go 8.6 and 6.8. Burrow 8.6, Trevor Lawrence 6.8. And we'll see how that plays out, see if I can continue my streak up 3-1. It feels good. Feels good. Feels good to win.
I had a huge lead last year, and you made a solid comeback in the second half.
It can't be done.
Don't get too comfortable.
Point out, we had a fun run passer boot from last week. That was how many 8-plus yard runs for Joe Mixon, how many personal fouls in the game, and how many Steelers sacks. And it felt like any of those you could make a great argument for. Here's how that turned out in case you had a bet on it. Joe Mixon had 4 runs of 8-plus. There were 2 personal fouls in the game, and the Steelers got 0 sacks. Jay, you were closer on that one because you had more belief in the mix and long runs happening than I did.
Yeah, even with the Steelers having all those pass rushers out, I thought they were still going to be wary to drop Joe back a lot and run Mixon a lot. And it just felt like it's just all year. Even that Chicago game, late in that game, it felt like he was ready to bust one, and he never did. I thought he was going to get on track, and I don't know if I would have predicted 27 for one of those runs, but I thought he would get a handful of double-digit ones, and he did. He had 3 double digits, the 1 for 9, so I hit something. I guess maybe we should start keeping track of run-passer boots.
It's hard to judge sometimes, though. And so, yeah. So I to me, it's more of a good discussion and for a bet that people can make for themselves going into a game. I'm happy to. If you want to start keeping track, I'm happy to see if I can rack up some wins there, too. No problem for me on that.
No, I'll pass.
All right. Let's go this week's run, pass, or boot. What will be higher? Jags rushing yards. We just talked about how they've had some success rushing the ball. Ja'Marr Chase receiving yards. Or combined pass attempts in the game. Of course, Burrow has been, of all the starting quarterbacks, no one's thrown fewer than Burrow through 3 games. They've been so run heavy, but we just talked about maybe that will change. Maybe that will change. Maybe Trevor Lawrence will have to throw it a bunch. A lot to go on there. What do you got, Jay?
I probably shouldn't bet against Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase at this point, but I'm going to run with Jaguars rushing yards just for the reasons I mentioned before, that this Bengals defense is going to be a little fatigued, a little worn down. It is the Jaguars' strength. They ran for 159 last week. So I'll run with that one. I will, I'll pass on Chase receiving yards, and I'll boot the combined pass attempts. Even though that one's a little more steady, you can usually count on that being in the 70 to 80 range. I do think both teams are going to be kind of run heavy minded in this Thursday night game. And we've seen Joe throw a lot fewer passes. Trevor Lawrence might get up in the Ben Roethlisberger range if things go south for them in the run game. But I don't think we're going to see Joe Burrow throw it a ton. So I'll boot that one.
All right. I'm totally different. I am running with Ja'Marr Chase. I am passing on the passes, and I'm booting the Jags run game.
Yeah.
I think we see another big one from Chase, and I think his coming out party continues this time in front of a live national audience. It just feels like that's the way he's going right now and the way they've got things going. So that's my thoughts on that. Prediction time. What do we got?
The Bengals haven't been 7.5-point favorites for a long time. I don't think they cover, but I do think they win. I'm going Bengals 27, Jags 21.
Okay. I will say, you know, the Jags have had these three straight double-digit losses. They're going on the road in a short week. I think the Bengals take advantage. I think Bengals 28, Jags 17, continue the Jags streak. I think a couple of interceptions, maybe another one for Logan Wilson, makes a big difference in this one. All right, that'll wrap us up. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back with the walkout or the post-game podcast for you after the late game on Thursday. So I hope everybody enjoys that and enjoys maybe having a weekend that they'll feel a little more fancy-free, not having a Bengals game hang over them on Sunday. I know I will. I plan on thoroughly enjoying this weekend. So always, it's the best part about the Thursday game. Everything gets shoved into these couple of days, and you're going nuts for a few days, and then all of a sudden – there's that free weekend just sitting right on you. It's delightful. It's delightful. So
it's everybody aeration Saturday at the Morrison household.
What is it?
Aeration Saturday at the Morrison
household. Wow.
I'm renting an aerator. How fun is that?
Not fun. Is it fun? Is aerating fun?
Getting compliments on a nice yard is fun. But yes, aerating itself is not fun.
No. Should I be aerating, Jay?
You have to make that decision yourself. You have a sloped backyard. I would not recommend it.
I have a very sloped backyard. Does not sound like something I'm going to do. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Enjoy the game on Thursday, and we'll talk to you afterwards. Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.